In this podcast, we will be talking with Dr. Rachel Turman, Assistant Professor of Sociology at Ohio University.
Something about yourself, about your role here or what you do, so we have a little bit of that as an introduction.
Sure. So I apologize at the top because my voice is not like it usually is, but my name is Rachel Turman, and I am Assistant Professor of Sociology here at Ohio University. And I'm a rural sociologist, so I specialize in sociological issues in rural places, specifically in the United States. And my area of expertise is in Appalachia.
Okay. And what is your role with the SARE grant?
So I, excuse me, I have done some collaborative work with Rural Action and some other community organizations in the area. And when I came to OU, I was really interested in, because I was new to the area about 3 years ago. And so I was really interested in working with a lot of community organizations and getting to know what community organizations were up to in the region in order to both integrate those things into my classes that I teach, and also in order to make myself available in service to what was going on in the region. And so through my connection with Rural Action, I guess they got in touch with me about the SARE grant and asked if I would be the rural sociologist on the grant for them. Mm-hmm. And I have some background in agriculture, sociology of agriculture, from my PhD research and time at Penn State University. I worked a lot with women farmers during the top 6 years that I spent at Penn State, and so I was happy to sign on with the grant.
So what do you think are some of the barriers that women in farming, or maybe even more specifically in the dairy, especially dairy industry, if you will, what do you think are some of the barriers, particularly for Appalachian women, or even more specific, Southeast Ohio?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say that I don't know if I can answer those very specific questions, but based on research that I've done with women farmers in the past, and this was more based on women farmers in Pennsylvania and in the Northeast, which I think there will be some similarities with women in this area, but I haven't done enough research with women specifically in Southeast Ohio to say for sure that that's the exact same. But some of the common barriers that we found with women farmers to get into farming were access to land, labor, and capital. So a lot of times sons will inherit farmland from their families, and women less often inherit farmland or land at all. And so access to land right off the bat is a barrier to farming, or setting up a farm operation. Access to just the capital necessary to start up a farming operation, if you're talking specifically about a dairy operation, I think there's a huge amount of capital and resources you need for that kind of operation, especially if you are trying to make it profitable and sustain a living off of a dairy operation. And then also access to labor. So just in terms of being able to have the resources to hire people to help on the farm or with the operation, women oftentimes talk about that being a barrier for them. Some other things we found common among women farmers that we talked to through qualitative research and also through surveys that we did was that sometimes, this is not all the times, but sometimes women are taken less seriously within farming communities, and they're not their identity as farmer is not respected or appreciated in the way that men who are in farming just kind of get the default respect of what it means to be a farmer. And so that can be, it's maybe not necessarily a barrier, but it's something that women have to deal with when they're first starting up an operation, trying to gather information, especially when they're interacting with institutions like agricultural extension agents and offices, and just trying to access information and resources.
Well, in Ohio, as the USDA says, you know, women are part of the underserved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my belief as a woman farmer that is very much still a male-oriented occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And really does limit women in a big way. And then also, if you add the rural aspect of still very traditional male
mm-hmm.
culture,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a big challenge. I know mm-hmm. if you're in Athens County, it's a little bit better in that Athens is a blue county with a little more, in certain pockets, more liberal mm-hmm. in their thinking. But if you come from a county like Muskingum,
mm-hmm.
it's quite a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think are some of the trends that are happening with women and organizing around farming and resources and all that
yeah.
kind of stuff?
Well, it's interesting to think about the trajectory of women in farming, because women have been a part of farming since since the beginning.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
not it's not that women are new to farming necessarily.
Just to say, we started it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, yeah.
We are the founders.
right.
For sure.
And so it's interesting that oftentimes when we think of the image of a farmer, we just assume a male, you know, a male person. But so women have been a part of formal organizing in farming for a long, long time, but often they were kind of in auxiliary positions or in supportive positions, and were assumed to be a farmer's helper and not the main principal operator of the farm. one of the trends that we, you know, pointed out when we were doing this research in Pennsylvania was that the U.S. Census made a change to allow there to be more than one principal operator designated on the census form. And so then we saw this big increase in mm-hmm. the amount of women who were claiming the title of principal operator on the farm. And so that has something to do with the increase of women farmers, but there's just been an increase in women farmers overall. Part of what we were interested in was the rise of women in sustainable agriculture specifically, and that's not to say there's been a rise in women in conventional agriculture as well, but just the trend of sustainable agriculture in the United States gaining steam recently. I think women have had a leading role in that and have done a lot of the innovation around sustainable agriculture, partly because of the barriers that exist for women to get into farming. So they don't have access to those huge tracts of land or big capital, or they don't inherit, you know, operations in the same way that, or the same rate, I guess, as men do. And so they've had to come up with alternative ways of getting into farming if they want to farm. And so oftentimes these are smaller and more sustainable types of farming operations. And so I see that as one of the trends in agriculture, and one in which I think women have been doing a lot of the innovation and leadership and is sometimes recognized, but not always recognized.
mm-hmm. One of the things that I was reading about too a while ago, but it was talking about that women in it that are working in sustainable agriculture, whatever that defines as,
mm-hmm.
They have less debt, they are producing more on less land,
mm-hmm.
so I guess that's that innovation.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, what do you think is the future of the of women as farmers? You know, we've been in a very traditional situation where we've had to move ourselves out of, you know, saying we have to find other ways to do this because we don't want to operate as mm-hmm. the male culture.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be innovative, we're going to be creative so we can make mm-hmm. it happen. But then where does that lead? What are the things that you think contribute to however it's going to evolve?
Yeah, I mean, there's huge potential, I think, for women in agriculture and the ways in which they've been able to come up with alternative farming practices, alternative ways of entering farming. But that, I'll say, you know, that doesn't mean that they're, that they still don't face all those barriers continuously. So even when they're, you know, coming up with these great innovations in farming and they're able to have, you know, small diversified farms that, you know, that are successful, you know, the profitability of those farms and their ability to sustain themselves economically is still, you know, pretty tight. It's not like, you know, fairy tale happy right. ending kind of thing. The structures, I think, that have been set up to support agriculture in the United States are, you know, very slowly responding to some of these changes. And so I think it's still very difficult for small farmers and for women farmers to get around some of those issues. So in terms of the future, I think that, you know, women have made a lot of progress in agriculture, and through their information sharing and their networking you know, some of the increasing interest in sustainable agriculture and local food and all that kind of thing, there's a lot of opportunity for women right now in agriculture, but there's still a lot of a risk involved in being someone in farming just in general, and for women specifically in terms of, you know, trying to maintain a livelihood and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are the opportunities, the increased opportunities?
Well, I just think, excuse me, I think there are more opportunities in terms of market for local food production that I think lends itself to the types of operations that women farmers get into.
Uh-huh. Well, one of the things that I find interesting is this whole idea of women coming together. And I think if we step out of farming mm-hmm. and we, as women in farming, and we just look at society as a whole, mm-hmm. that there is this slow thing that seems to be sort of underneath of everything of women beginning to organize themselves again. And I might be wrong about that, but I feel there's an emerging trend, and I wonder how that will influence women farmers.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question, is whether women will find some kind of commonality among them in order to come together and organize for that particular group of people. I think a lot of women farmers, I think it depends on the networks that have been established in certain places. So I think in some places there's a really strong, robust network of women farmers. I think in other places that's not, that hasn't happened yet. Because in different regions, you know, farming is different, and you know, just the available resources for women are different in different places. But I think that overall, I think that it depends on whether women are going to be more drawn into networks and organizing among women specifically, or if they're going to be more drawn into networks around sustainable agriculture more generally. And I think it depends on where you're living and what kinds of organizations are available, what kinds of networks are out there, how many other women in your, you know, radius of driving there are who are farming. So I think that makes a big difference in terms of how women are able to organize with other women.
One of the things that I see as a farm woman who's been trying to organize women in sustainable farming is that one of the tremendous barriers is time, because women are still very traditional. Even if they have access to labor, they're still they're working long hours. They're trying to do a lot of different things in order to make a living, because that's required. You can't just make it from one raising mushrooms or dairy goats or whatever. And they still have children. They still have a life.
Right.
They're trying to market their products. And so what suffers is this sort of networking, education, no matter how good or how right we get that piece of, you know, connecting women to potential buyers of your products. They don't have the time. They don't have the flexibility. And I don't know how that changes. It seems so traditionally women, you know, how we do things. So that's why I'm hoping this trend of women coming together, but maybe it's just going to be middle class women that are organizing themselves, like in the 1916, when all the things were going on with women. It was mostly women who had discretionary
had
time.
Yeah,
that's right. So how do we do that? And the other challenge that we have that we know is really so incredible in this region is access, lack of access to high-speed broadband. So as women, we have to go to the library, or we have to go somewhere else in order to do something like Skype or do a webinar or whatever.
Right,
and again, then that takes time, that takes will. So how do we overcome some of those barriers? And I'm not asking you specifically, but I'm just saying we've identified these barriers here. What do we do? And we're not sure.
Right, yeah. So I think that, I think those two issues go hand in hand, right? Because one of the solutions to the time issue would be if women were able to connect digitally and not have to travel to meet face to face and that type of thing. And so if you don't have access to that, to broadband, and you have to go to the library or something, or take time out of your day to go somewhere else, and we can't stay on your farm, it makes it that much more difficult. And just if you have a more dispersed population, it makes it harder to travel around and that kind of thing. So I think that's a huge component. I think that, I think time to, I mean, really, like I said, women have been organizing as part of agriculture for a long, long time, but I think the organizing and networking around sustainable agriculture specifically and has been much more recent. And so when I was in Pennsylvania, I was working as part of the Women's Agricultural Network, the Pennsylvania Women's Agricultural Network there, which is one of several regional women's agricultural networks across the country, but there's not one in every state or anything. And you know, quite the opposite, in a minority of states. And so, but those are developing over time, and new ones keep forming. And I think there's kind of a burgeoning national network of women in agriculture, in sustainable agriculture, especially. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that over time some of these issues will be worked out in terms of broadband and broadband access. And of course that has to do with,
we have to have a different government.
Right, the government and
yes,
what
we
they're
must.
Willing to invest
we
in terms of infrastructure. And so, you know, the political aspect of it is important. The ability of women to be able to participate, even if they don't have a a regional network that they can get involved in, being able to access this kind of more national network of women farmers might be important in terms of establishing some more regional networks across the United States. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, I'm hopeful that over time that will occur. The other thing that might happen is that the more traditional resources for farmers in terms of USDA and Ag Extension would become more relevant.
Or women-friendly.
Or women-friendly, right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that is theoretically part of their agenda, but those institutions were set up at a time when men were dominant in the industry, and so integrating women and the types of farming that women are doing into those institutions has been really slow going, and so I think that women farmers often find that those while they have some use to them, they don't fulfill these specific needs that women farmers have. And so, changes in those institutions would be great as well. But in lieu of that, I think some of these regional networks have been really beneficial to women farmers in terms of supporting them in figuring out, how to start up an operation, how to deal with specific, issues that come up in their specific type of operation, just general support and and feeling less isolated as a woman on a farm, and all those kinds of things that, mm-hmm. that women farmers need to keep going.
So, in your work with rural women, what would you say is the best advice you've ever had for just being a woman trying to do something in mm-hmm. life?
Yeah, again, I think coming back to that networking thing, it was just really talking with women about being able to connect with peers, with people who are doing, a similar thing to them. It might not be the exact same operation, or they might be, 60 years old and connecting with someone who's 25 years old, and so there might be some differences in that way, but being able to talk to someone else who's in the same position and dealing with some of the same issues peer-to-peer, not necessarily like ag expert to beginning farmer. That was so powerful for them in terms of gaining knowledge and figuring out what to do, and then also in terms of just affirming their role as a farmer and just giving them the energy to keep doing what they are doing. I've heard so many stories from women who said that experience of being connected with other women farmers, which is very, very powerful, and that after having those kinds of connections, they just felt refreshed and ready to go again, and like they weren't out in the middle of nowhere, on their farm all alone, that they were part of this really important agriculture food system, and that gave them the kind of both the knowledge and the energy to keep going and keep up their operation.
That's good, because I think that over the course of women's cultural history, I think that might be the most important point that keeps getting made, is mm-hmm. that we're drawn out of our sense of isolation mm-hmm. to say, yes, we know how to do this, or yeah. yes, we're not alone, or no, we're not crazy, mm-hmm. or me too, whatever. So yeah. That's great.
And I didn't mean to say that being in a rural place is the middle of nowhere.
No, but
I hate
it
that term, but
it is. It's
but sometimes
isolating.
People can feel like that, or mm-hmm. people, put that on rural places. But the women on those farms, though, that's a center of our food system, which is like the basic building block of society, really. And so, mm-hmm. They're so important, and the work that they do is extremely valuable. And so I think having affirmation about that and being able to talk with other people who are struggling to do that kind of work at the same time is a really powerful experience for women.
Yeah, I do too. Anything else you want to add to the talk about life, the universe?
I guess I would just also add that the networking component we found was really beneficial in terms of education. I think, I don't know if I exactly mentioned that, but again, there are more formal pathways to agricultural education that are out there, but we found that for a lot of women who are just getting into farming or who maybe grew up on a farm but didn't weren't raised in the same way that maybe their brothers were, that they didn't expect them to take over the farming operation and so then didn't gain the knowledge growing up that maybe their male counterparts did, that the peer-to-peer networking was really, really valuable educational tool that, again, I think is something that's that can be really helpful for women farmers specifically because they don't always, the education resources through Ag Extension are not always set up in a way that is friendly to women in those positions. So that's just a really valuable aspect of it as well.
Well, one of the things that I see, which takes that even a little bit further, and is the idea that we have had a rich history of passing on mm-hmm. the knowledge of how to care for animals, how to mm-hmm. grow food, how to heal mm-hmm. wounds, all of these things that farmers and people in general used to know. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be such a lack of that knowledge in the marketplace right now. So there are a lot of mistakes made, a lot of, lack of success just because we don't carry mm-hmm. forward that knowledge. And that's one of the things I think might be good about the especially dairy grant project, because what we're trying to do is say, look, there's this knowledge base that exists. How mm-hmm. do we link that up mm-hmm. with doing a good job, a good enough job to make a living, and mm-hmm. then also how we make that known to our customers so mm-hmm. we create a marketplace for mm-hmm. our products. Mm-hmm. But it starts with that basic knowledge mm-hmm. that we haven't carried forward to the next generation of mm-hmm. people doing this work. And I think women are much more amenable to that mm-hmm. As culturally.
Yes, and I would add to, like you're bringing up the, developing a market and the customers, and I think that that's another thing that through our research we kind of got into a little bit but didn't explore it enough for me to know exactly what I'm trying to say right now, but that the customers and the eaters of the food are also share a lot of values with the farmers, and so mm-hmm. that kind of knowledge education wise I think is beneficial not only for the farmers but for the marketplace as well, in terms of developing women's agriculture, I think that the educational piece, especially as it relates to, regional products, is really important for consumers as well mm-hmm. as farmers.
Well, when you look at statistics about, when you talk about that connection between the customer
mm-hmm.
or the consumer and the farmer,
mm-hmm.
Even more important than organic, which is something like, was it organically raised? So mm-hmm. like 22% of the people said they want to know that.
Mm-hmm.
But 35% mm-hmm. wanted to know how that animal was treated.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I feel like that's really women driving the marketplace. So how do we do a better job of saying we have humanely taken care of our animals and what that means, or we have mm-hmm. humanely taken care of the land. It
right,
isn't
right.
just
mm-hmm.
about that.
Mm-hmm.
How have we cared for that?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I think we have a lot of opportunity. We need marketing. We mm-hmm. need to know how to spin it, as
mm-hmm.
they say.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And I think that there's a huge market for that, right? That people are, yeah, very invested in those kinds of values. So
yeah, it's the jazzy, sexy thing for the moment. So we need to figure out how to help ourselves make a living by just sharing openly what we do.
Right.
And I think that's a big challenge because I think we live in a culture that says we need to, you know, hold it close because we worked hard to figure this out.
Right.
And instead of saying, look, if we share this knowledge with others and also the next generation, we give ourselves security. And, you know, how do we get past that? That's a very cultural, big American cultural way we deal with things of being secretive.
Yeah.
And don't want to share the formula.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you say that because we found that in our Pennsylvania network that many of the women were really happy to, they would share their whole like operating budget and like, you know, their whole operation details and stuff because for the reason you're talking about, because they wanted to be, they just thought that that information was so useful to other farmers. And so they were, it was interesting because, you know, I would assume that you would want to, you know, you don't want to let other people know how you're being successful because then they might take away your customers or something. But we found the opposite for women there. So I don't know enough about that dynamic to know why it would be like that in some places and not other places, or what facilitates that kind of openness. But I was really surprised and impressed by the women who were like, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, I'll tell you all the details about what I'm doing and how to do it and how much money it costs and how much money I'm making, you know, the how much profit I make is another thing that I think people would get really, would be really hesitant to share and be open about, or if I'm making a profit at all, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
That's great. I think we got it.
Okay.
But I do.
Thanks to Rachel Turman for sharing her ideas and expertise. Technical assistance and photography is provided by Kat Harrier and Devin Kennedy. This program is a part of a collaboration between Rural Action and NCSARE Research and Education. In future podcasts, we'll be interviewing a variety of people who are connected to the specialty dairy product industry, plus talk about how to make a living by supplementing a dairy business with other products produced by the animal. Marketing, branding, animal welfare, standards and regulations, and more will be covered in upcoming podcasts. For more information, visit www.ruralaction.org. Copyright 2018 by Rural Action and Blue Rock Station, LLC.